Accession number 8657, rule number 3.
Mr. Green, reel 3. I think you were telling me you were attached to headquarters because you were still cooking as well as acting as a rifleman.
That's true, yeah. And, well, I think it was after sending out probing patrols and all that towards the fort, which we heard that had been taken by the Italians. They drove the Sudanese Defence Force out of it. It's only sort of a mud fort, but it was a strategic position because it led to the only pathway or roadway, which was actually called it a roadway or pathway, it's led up into Khartoum. Because all the, as I say, either side of that roadway was thick jungle, elephant grass, which was more or less inaccessible for transport. But anyhow, it came about on November the 6th, half past 5 in the morning, that we had to take this fort, which was actually raided at the time. And because I stayed back with the headquarters, and I was a cook, and we could hear the battle raging because we had no heavy artillery or anything like that at the time. It was just all small arms and machine guns. We had no planes. The only planes we had was sent up from Khartoum was two Lysanders. And they had been shot down. We see them shot down, and the pilots were that bailed out was actually killed coming down in their parachute. We saw that, although we didn't discover the bodies anyhow. And anyhow, we took the fort. We drove the Italians out, and of course, I heard some right old stories about it because we held it, as you know, for a few hours. And word came back to me that I was to get some food and that ready and take it up on the lorry to hot tea and whatever I could muster up, which I did do. Got all the Dixies all in the lorry, in the hay boxes to keep it hot. And I got a sergeant out of C Company, who I forget his name, I've been trying to think of his name for years, but I can't. And we went up in the lorry, and it was a very, very bumpy road, very bumpy. I think I lost half the tea before I got there, anyhow. I think each container I uncovered, I only had about half in it. But anyhow, we got to the fort, and I had served out the tea and all that, and I had opened up some herrings in tomato sauce with some square biscuits and all that, dished them out, heated up. Course. And that's what they had for that day.
How did you heat it up?
Well, we had one of these burner stoves with hay boxes and all that. You keep them on the stand. You had the Dixies on the stand. It was four-gallon drums to make the tea in, and you had little pans with two handles on it. You could lift into the hay boxes to keep them hot. You just more or less fried them up in the gravy sort of thing. In the tomato sauce, so you had them hot.
What was the stove powered by? Was it petrol?
Powered by petrol, yeah, on a foot pump. You had to pump air into it, and then you just light it,
so
and then you control it. A pressure stove, sort of a petrol pressure stove. Was petrol, and we used to cook that up by then. Anyhow, the first meal I took up to them and that, and I see a couple of mates out there. I see, they said, bloody horrible, Jim, sort of thing, you know. We lost so and so, lost so and so, lost so and so, and the names that they mentioned, I thought myself, it was goodbye to our football team, because most of the blokes that was killed then was a bloke named Clara Butt, he come from East Ham, and Nobby Hughes, he come from London, his brother, a bloke named Paddy Dornan, who I've got a photo indoors of to this day. He was killed, and this Beckworth, this Corporal Beckworth, who went out on patrol with me before, he was killed. And I think all told, I think we, on that dawn raid, I think we lost about 6 killed and about 10 or 15 or so was actually injured at the time. Well, anyhow, I dished out the first meal, and they said, well, don't stop here because the Italians will be coming over and they'll be bombing. And get the vehicles and that out of it, because water lorries then, we used to take up tanks, water tanks, and But also we had the, what they call the camel drums. They hold about 20 gallons of water. We used to strap them on the backs of the camels on the desert. But those was left back because it was all fresh water. Kept them back, and we went up with a water cart so they could fill up, replenish their water bottles and all that, see, because, I mean, out there, you know, water is water. And it's more precious than petrol or anything. And anyhow, they replenished all their water bottles up and that, and they, a lot of them seemed quite, you know, happy and all that there. And, well, they would be, because not only had the water we took up, they also had the Italian wine cellar, which they had captured, so they had that, and also apparently must have been paying out, Dave, because they had all the Italian wages and all lira notes, thousand pound lira notes and everything, which was used actually for toilet paper in the end. But, of course, during the Abyssinian War, the Italians, you know, they took in all their loose women at the time. So the blokes was walking around with dresses and that on when we got there, because they'd pitched all their laundry off their line, with the laundry, because the Italians had just scarped then. But the objective was taken, and they wasn't allowed to go further than that, but just take the fort and that and hold it, which they did do.
What was the fort like? You said it was just a mud fort.
Well, it was part mud, part brick. It was mostly as the old, these here old Zook, you get Arab Zook and all that. It's all done up with muck and all that, hardened off with the sun, with a bit of straw in it, like a wall, all patched up and everything like that, you know. But mind you, the fort itself was pretty strong in that sense, because it actually belonged to the Sudanese Defence Force, a police force, which were pretty pretty good people, they were at the time, because we met a lot of them after they came out. And it was... wasn't all that defended. I mean, it was from the Italian point of view. I mean, it was easy because they only had rifles and that's all they had. But anyhow, we took that fort, and then we was told to get the hell out of it in case the planes come over. So I got back in the cook's wagon, and the sergeant come up to me. He says, when you get back, he said, get the Dixies and all that on, he says, and get ready for a meal for breakfast in the morning. Well, time I got back, it must have been 2 o'clock in the morning, time I got back from the fort. And I got everything ready. Stayed up best part of the night, and I must have dozed off. Got all the Dixies all ready on the stands and everything. And being pitch dark, got back, I just made them out, put the stands down, put the Dixies on, and opened up a few tins of meatloaf. We used to have them in the big tins like meatloaf. Open up a couple of tins of them, because I was going to start frying some if I had time, but if I hadn't, the others was in the Dixie with water, I was going to heat them up and just cut them up in slices and take that up to them. So, I don't know, I must have laid down and had a doze, because when I got up in the morning, I couldn't see where the stoves were. They was there, but I couldn't see them. They were actually covered, literally, absolutely covered in ants. Well, I'd open up this here tins of meat, which I shouldn't have done, really. I should have... it was my own fault for opening them up. But even part of my skin was burnt, and the blanket I laid on was half-eaten and everything. And I was covered in ants myself, all over the legs and that. Because I'd actually had put the Dixies, which I didn't know at the time, right behind an ant hill. And of course, they'd opening up them tins at the time. And must have smelt it. And they were actually covered, and it stood as... oh, I've set the Dixies on it, and there's a couple of messes and messes and messes. So I just lit the stove and burnt a lot off. Heated up all the remainder of tins of meatloaf, made the tea, and I think we made tracks up to the fort. It must have been about 6 o'clock, dawn was just on the go then, like. And we got up there about up half seven, because it'd take about an hour to get by track. Getting through because of the lorries.
How far was it?
About 2 miles. But yeah, this track was absolutely terrible to go through. It was boulders, you had to get out and perhaps shift a boulder and things like that, you know, and water running down and everything like that. But that didn't worry us, because it wasn't much like a stream. Anyhow, we got there. Well, we didn't get there. Matter of fact, on that morning, I got everything ready and all that, and was on the way there, and the catastrophe started. We see half the men running back.
Were they on foot or were they...
On foot, all on foot. No, not mechanised, because there's no lorries here. Because they was all back in on what they call the B echelon compound. So the sergeant turned around to me and he said, "What's up?" I said, "I don't know, sergeant, do I?" I said. So anyhow, got hold of one bloke, I don't know who he was, one bloke there, and said, "What's up?" He says, "Oh," he says, "the Italians have sent over gas bombs, gas shells. They're dropping gas." He says, "And half of us slung a gas mask away." And of course, they was all running back. Half the battalion was on the run. So he said to me, he says, "Well, we're going through." But he said to the driver, he says, "Go and drive on." So the driver got a bit nasty and that. He said, "How can I drive on?" He said, "What's good going up this? And they're all coming back." So he said, "You carry on." So he said, "I'm not going to." So he says, "You'll be under close arrest if you don't go on," he says, "and you'll be up for court martial." So I turned around, I said, "What do you want, a VC then?" I said, "You see what's happening here, can't you?" He said, "You can keep quiet, Green, and all." So I said, "Okay, I will." Just like that, sorry. So anyhow, we went up to the fort. We met some of the lads and dished them out their food and tea and all that. Because it turned out that half the battalion had run away, and it wasn't gas shells, it was smoke shells that had come over. And that's how the name got around then, because... anyhow...
So that's what started the panic, was it?
That started the panic. Because CO at the time, I forget what CO was, I don't know if it was Maitland or what, or Devo at the time or what. But anyhow, the battalion was reorganised and all that, and they went forward. And of course, we moved up, like, battalion moved up in... battalion file, like, you know, company for company sort of thing, marching, because we couldn't use transport the other side.
You had to go on foot?
It went on, all on foot. Although the transport was creeping along, but you couldn't, because, I mean, you had forward positions and everything going forward all the time, sort of thing. It was leapfrogging all the way down. Like,
a tactical advance.
That's true. Until, I think we'd done about 3 or 4 days of this. Couple of little skirmishes, forward positions, they had a few skirmishes with Italians and all that. And then, because our people was going down then with a lot of fever. It's going to have a lot of fever then.
What sort of fever was that?
It was a black water fever and dysentery. Mostly it went on dysentery. And they turned around and restricted drinking a lot of the water, because I think some of the water we had, I mean, although it was got back at a place, all the water carts used to go back and replenish their water and all that. I mean, where they got it from, I didn't know, but they used to go back because there's no actual echelons to get water from or anything, only a village. And I think they was replenished out of a well yourself. Wherever they were, I don't know. I wouldn't swear on it.
How much water were you getting per day?
Well, you was restricted to your own water bottle. And if you used that up in one go, you'd had it until the next lot came out. I mean, you didn't know when the next lot was coming out. If we could get through with it, we'd get through with it. If you couldn't get through with it, you just had to get some water away and drink it out of the stream or anything like that, if it was clean enough. I mean, then you don't know what's been in it. I mean, it could have been dead lizards or anything like that, which there was at the time. And that's how they kept on. Well, we got up just off of Lake Tana. And we halted there. But we wasn't equipped out or anything like that, and we was pulled out.
You say you had a couple of little skirmishes. Did you see anything of what happened, or did you just hear the shooting?
Well, you could hear all the shooting and that from where we was. Like, you know, I mean, it may have been about a mile away. You know, when it's out in the desert, out in the jungle and that. And you could hear small arms fire. It was mostly small arms fire because we had no artillery. Because the only artillery we had was 225 pounders. And they was left back at Galabat because we had to rig them up as aircraft guns. We dug a big trench, like, laid down, like, with a muzzle of the gun pointing 25 degrees upwards. So if we were being bombed or anything like that, planes come out, they was firing it so the shells go over. If it missed a plane, it would go over into the Italian line. So it didn't make no difference to us. They had it either way. And as far as I know, they stayed back at Fort Galabat, the two guns that we had, the only artillery we had. And then we was relieved in, as I say, I think it was by the West Yorks.
Did you take any prisoners during this advance?
I did not see any. Oh, I beg your pardon. I think there was two. I couldn't swear on it at the time. I think there was two. And we never actually we never caught them. I think the Sudan Defence Force police had actually caught them and handed them over to us. But, I mean, we could only send them back.
Did you actually see them?
I saw one Italian with his... he just had the... his... like what they wore up in the desert at the time, his Middle East garb and that on, like, you know, and green feather. I can always remember that. Because I liked that. He had a nice green feather stuck in his head. Because they never had the pith helmets or anything like we had. They had the soft hat. I'll always remember them.
And he was a European, was he? He wasn't a native?
Oh, no, he wasn't native. No, he was European. Yeah, he was European. Because most of them that I think our people come up against was actually all European, all European Italians. No natives or anything like that. Not out there, because most of them actually come up from Italian Somali then, I think.
When you were doing this tactical advance forward from Galabat, what sort of rate were you moving at? How many miles a day were you going?
Oh,
a
question really, because well, day. I think 4 mile a day, 5 mile a day, and then they'd stop sort of. Well, at night time, come on, sort of thing. I mean, perhaps one day we'd only go. Well, I mean, myself sort of thing. I'm talking about myself. The battalion might have gone a bit further. I don't know. May have been less, because I didn't know exactly how far the battalion was actually forward, because I was mostly back then at the time with headquarters. I used to go up with different rations, but not real right forward, because they wouldn't allow you to go right forward, not in the lorries or anything. Each forward section was relieved at so many intervals.
It was leapfrogging.
And come back. Leapfrogged all the time. That's all you can do out there in the... in a vegetation like it was there. I mean, you couldn't go up and say, right, we'll relieve that company tomorrow at 200 hours or something like that, and move the whole company right in and take that company out, because it was on the move the whole time. It wasn't actually up in the desert. I mean, when we was there, I mean, you advanced on a place, you took a place, and that was that. You stuck there for a while, unless you went forward to another place as a battalion. But this time it wasn't. It was companies and companies at a time, see.
What did you do overnight then? Presumably you stopped moving overnight.
Well, we just stopped, and you sent out what they call a listening patrol, a sit down patrol. It used to go out so many hundred yards as a listening patrol and stay there till
just for security.
You had to stand to and stand down first thing in the morning. That was just a security reason, because I mean, they couldn't do nothing and we couldn't actually do nothing. I mean, unless they came actually up in force. Well, and then they met force, because the whole battalion was more or less impounded, sort of thing, the same as they would be impounded, because it wasn't actually spread out right across the desert for miles or anything like that. You just moved forward.
Did you then take up a sort of defensive deployment for an overnight stop?
Oh, yes, you had to do that. Yes, you had your forward sections out all the way around the perimeter. You had your own perimeter. I mean, you might have a company which would be 500 yards, 600 yards away, another company would be forward, another company would be back here, and another company over there, sort of a, like that plan, a zigzag plan sort of thing. Well, then each company itself, of a night time, they sent out their listening patrol, which they would go out, say, 300 yards, 400 yards in front of that company, and they'd make a defence line right the way along, sort of thing, so they knew how far they'd actually go. And then they'd make that defence line right the way along as a listening post. So if anything did actually happen as they was attacked, well then the rear sections, the battalion, headquarters and everything like that, they were ready if there was any onslaught or anything like that to come.
Did you ever dig in for an overnight stop?
Every night. Every night you had to dig in. Didn't matter where you was, if you could dig in. I mean, if you got...
You dig in?
If you were just unlucky and had come across granite or rock or anything like that, we just had to... make what cover you actually could. But you did, everyone had to dig in of a night.
What sort of position would you dig then? Would it be just for you, or would there be two or three of you in a?
Well, I never dug. I never dug in because I was underneath the lorry all the time. I swear, that was my position. So I used to go underneath the cook's lorry.
So this just digging in was against air attack primarily.
Well, no, not really. I wouldn't say actually, because we never see a lot of planes, not even Italian planes. I mean, the only planes we actually see, apart from that Sunday morning at Atbara, do you know, I never see a bomber. It was mostly Fiat fighters. They used to come down a machine gun, yeah, but yeah, I mean, they was zoomed down and burst a machine gun, and they was away. I mean, we used to call them yellow bellies because they wouldn't stop and fight or anything. The same as the troops, they was just the same. Unless they knew they're going to have the upper hand, that was that. But no, I mean, it was just there. When you dug in of a night time or anything like that, it was more or less for your own defence, personal defence yourself. I mean, you've got to stay alive.
But the other people who did dig in, did they normally dig individual holes or did they dig
three man holes? Every man more or less had his own little shelter. I mean, someone never dug in. I mean, I won't say every man digs in. I mean, it's the same as, I mean, when you was up in the desert, I mean, I never dug in a foxhole there. Only up in a forward position, if you was going to stay there, yes. But if you was on the move, no way are you going to turn around and say, I'm going to do an impregnable hole sort of thing, because you couldn't do it. But if you were staying there like we did up in the desert, I mean, you had your perimeter up in the desert, and you was out on a forward patrol and you had to stay there, perhaps you was there for 24 hours before you was relieved. Then you dug a hole and you dug it deep. And then the next man that come up to relieve you, he took that one over. And that's how they used to do it. Well, out there in Abyssinia, no way could we do that because you was on the move all the time. But over night time, so you just dug that hole or a space or what protection you could actually get. And that's what you've done. That was your defence. Maybe in a big lump of rock or something like that.
Did you have any shelter? I mean, you said you were under the truck. Was there any tentage for?
Oh, there was always intended for being shelled. Oh, yes. We had shells come over. We had them come over several times. But it didn't do a lot of damage.
What about gunning by the aircraft? Did that do any damage?
No, they was way out. A couple of lorries was just it, but not set on fire or anything like that, you know, just shell bursts along the side of it or something like that, a tyre burst or something like that. But I don't, regardless of our transport, I think we lost more transport like going down and coming back than we did actually in the fight itself, because the terrain was absolutely shocking. It was real shocking, the terrain, to go over. I'd seen a fight up in the desert, and I would down in Abyssinia and places like that. I felt sorry for them. What are these people down here? I feel real sorry. Because, I mean, when we came across a lot of the Abyssinians, I mean, with what they had, and they was lovely people, what we couldn't actually speak to them, not the Eritreans or anything like that, you couldn't speak to them, because, I mean, a lot of them couldn't speak English, and I couldn't speak Eritrean anyway, so, or Abyssinian. But I will say that what I saw, and I'll take my hat off to them, especially the old Ali Selassie's troops, because I think they put up a bloody wonderful show against the Italians itself. A real marvellous show.
What was so bad about the terrain then?
Well, you never had, actually, I mean, one day you'd be well and truly in the jungle. And the next day, well, you'd be dodging boulders sometimes as big as this room. Ant's nest. You couldn't go over the top of them. You had to go round them. And believe me, when you come against the ants, they're ants hills. From the sort of side of a mountain. And it was things like that. That's why transport was very, more or less obsolete, sort of thing. Unless at the time you did come to an open road.
Did you often come across proper roads?
Yeah, we did actually come up to the main road that led actually up to into Addis Ababa.
And what was that
from
road
Lake
like?
Tana. It was very good. It was sort of a metal road. And it put me in the mind of the same road as I went over when we went to up into Iraq. from Jordan. It's the one, just the one metal road. And the same metal road, it's more or less the same road that runs up from Mers and Matruh, and it goes right up to Benghazi, the other side of Benghazi. So, like, a road just like that. That's the only road that I actually saw. But other than that, it was camel's tracks and just elephant tracks, and that was it. That's the only thing.
Did you come across any Italian positions during this advance? Did you actually go through them after they'd been taken?
No, I didn't come through any little villages that had actually been come under Italian rule, sort of thing, but there were no actual Italians in there. I mean, they had scarped. I must have, in my word, that we was coming and just scarped, because the actual stand, as we heard afterwards, was after the West Yorks took over from us. I mean, they caught the full brunt of the Italian army then that was in Abyssinia around Lake Tana and back onto Eritrea and Addis Ababa.
So what happened to you then when you were relieved? You said you had a lot of sickness.
Yeah, I had a hell of a lot of sickness there. It was my first issue then of malaria. I'd been abroad all that time and never caught malaria once, and I did catch malaria then. And I had it very bad.
Roughly how many people in the battalion were down with sickness when you were relieved?
Well, when we were relieved, I did say that there was nearly a good half of the battalion was on under sickness with dysentery and colic and, you know, things like that through actually being out there. Well, they termed it, don't they, out there where we were. They turned around and said that it was a white man's grave out there, which I can quite believe it is a white man's grave. There's no getting away from it, because a white man can hardly live out there unless he's got proper care and everything. No way.
What were the medical services in your battalion then?
We had our own medical service, but I mean, they believed on Mepocrine tablets and other pills and all that. What else could it do? I mean, wounded-wise, our wounded, I mean, if we had which we did have, I mean, like, we had Galabat and all that, we had a couple of wounded after that sort of thing, but they were shipped straight away back. They went back to Khartoum, which was quite a way back, 60, 70-odd mile back. But we had the old blood wagons there, the old ambulances, and that. We always had ambulance with us, because that was attached to our battalion. And, of course, any operation had to be done or anything like that. We had a good doctor with us, our doctor there in the medical. He was quite a good bloke. Never forget him. And he used to say...